The whole question of how to figure out, how to balance out what we can understand philosophically about the fact that we are in fact one with the divine against what we actually experience, where on a day-to-day basis that isn't what we feel. I often think of it in this way. Well, Yogananda put it in a really excellent manner by saying it like this. He said, there are many levels to the dream, and each one is real on its own level, which is the kind of philosophical thinking that is common in the East and less common in the West. In the West, we're always trying to say, well, it's either this or it's that. And if it is that, then it can't be this. And if it's this, it can't be that. And we're always trying to divide things up. It doesn't really serve us, either philosophically or personally, to think too strongly like that. Because most of life is a confusing mix in the middle. You may have a long and wonderful friendship with someone, and then you have some kind of a falling out, or your values diverge suddenly, and all of a sudden that person who was really close to you is not close to you anymore. But in fact, all the experience that you had before was your true experience. And so that doesn't really cease to be true merely because something new has come into it. Swami Kriyananda was a member of Self-Realization Fellowship for a long time, and one of his greatest inspirations during that time was Sister Dayamata, who became the president and has passed away now a year ago. Subsequently, there was theological conflicts, and Swami Kriyananda was expelled from that organization by her. She then went to this great effort to discredit him and Ananda. I mean, it's a long story that's so common in religion, it would be interesting if it weren't so common. But in any case, at the end of all of this, Swami Kriyananda is writing his own autobiography, and he paints this glowing picture of Dayamata as a deeply devoted disciple, coming to Master when she was 17 years old, having been miraculously healed in her first contact with Master, dedicating her entire life as a nun to living in that organization, being his secretary, being with him all the time. And that's where he leaves it. And of course, after, the book doesn't go to the end of the time, but so many things after that proved her to be less than stellar, certainly in her relationship to him, and many, many other things can be said. And I said, Swamiji, here you are. You've created this glorious picture of this woman that has actually formed most of Ananda's opinion of her, has been formed by your book, even though she's also been your nemesis. His response was so expansive. Well, he said, what I wrote in that book is also true. And it's so hard for us sometimes to just hold all of these things at the same time. But when you stop and think about it, that's the consciousness of the divine. The goal of our life is to become, even as we live in these physical bodies and operate through these physical bodies, we are trying to be as God is even now. That's the masters who walk among us. They incarnate in physical bodies. They live as men live. Swami Kriyananda lived with Paramhansa Yogananda for the last 3.5 years of his life. Swamiji has said to us sometimes, he says, in many ways you may think that it would have been wonderful to be with him. How could you not think that? He died in 1952, so that option was not accessible to most of us. But he said, in many ways, you're lucky not to have ever seen him walking around. He said, Swamiji said, because it was so confusing for me. He was my guru. He was God incarnate. I could feel his infinite power. And then he was in the other room having lunch. And it was just like to put the two forces together sometimes. He said it was so confusing. Even once he said he was sitting in front of Master and his mind was just spinning with all of these different options. The infinite, the human, the personal, the impersonal, you know, the embodied, the disembodied. And Master walked over to him and with a look that Swamiji described of great sympathy, handed him an apple. You know, just don't even try. How can you possibly grasp it? And so in our own spiritual life, if we have bright minds and like the philosophy, which pretty much everybody who lives in this area is of that type. That's why we live here. You know, we not only go by our intuition and our inspiration, but we're also, we like to have good, solid, intellectual answers to things. So fortunately, this path of Master's path, Yogananda's path, especially interpreted by Swami Kriyananda, the founder of Ananda, it's so satisfying because you can sort of ferret out all those things. But sooner or later, you end up in this state of this dilemma, which is, well, if God is within me, why am I worshiping? Why am I praying? To whom am I praying? And who's helping whom? And all of these different questions, the mind just begins to scatter in all directions. And then you read, as we do every week, Master's Whispers from Eternity, which here he is. He is one with the infinite. He's a fully self-realized master, which is to say he no longer identifies with anything but the infinite. Even though when he lived in his physical body, he could move it around and he knew the personality he was supposed to play. He very colorfully explained that when you're in the state of the infinite and take incarnation in a physical body, which from time to time over the course of history he has done, he does it for only one reason, which is to help all of us. He says, at first, he said, when I see the personality I have to assume, he says it's confining and it's like putting on a heavy overcoat on a hot day. He said, but then I get used to it. Isn't that just like, you don't exactly know where to put that. The rest of us are trying so hard to expand beyond our physical selves to even care about our neighbors, you know, to consider the interest of our neighbors equal to our own. And Yogananda has to work hard even to identify with the body he's living in. And toward the end of his life, Swamiji tells us, that identification became so tenuous that Swamiji was walking with Master in the last year of his life. And Master stumbled and sort of fell against him and sort of looked and said, I'm in so many bodies. He said, sometimes I forget which one I'm supposed to keep moving. Now think about that. I mean, all of us, we send out an impulse of energy. We know exactly what it's supposed to do and where it's supposed to go. But the Master's consciousness is as much in everything as it is even in this one body. Years ago, when I still lived at Ananda Village, I was working on the staff of what is now the Expanding Light, and we had done a week-long program about the chakras, and it was the middle of the summer, and as part of that, and just for recreation, we went down to the Yuba River. The Yuba River cuts through a very deep canyon. So when you get down to the river, you're looking up at canyon walls like this, and because we had been talking about the different elements of the chakras, I was thinking in those terms when we sort of just lay out on the sun on these huge granite rocks. Now, if you really want to feel the earth element, stretch out on a granite rock. You know, the water is rushing past you, so there's the second chakra, and here you are on the first chakra, and then you have the fire of the sun for the third chakra. You have everything happening in front of you. So I'm stretched out on this rock, just doing the best I can to release the edges. You see, that's what we're working with all the time. We're working with the edges. Our consciousness goes out so far, and then it just doesn't go any farther. So you put your body on the earth, and you try to release the edges. And I'm looking up, and way up above us is this, I would like to think it was an eagle, but I suspect it was a hawk, sort of just flying up there. And all of a sudden, I just tried to feel like, what would it be, you know, to be all the way between here and that hawk, and then also have the hawk's point of view. I mean, these are just the tiniest fragments of what the Master's consciousness is truly like, and what our own consciousness is and will be when we fill in all the spaces between where we are going to be and where we are now. It's a profound and important spiritual practice, and one of the most interesting in many ways, simply to try to project your consciousness into the consciousness of the Masters, or to bring their consciousness to you, however you want to think about it. But to recognize that this is not something happening somewhere else. That master's picture right in front of you, looking into those eyes are our own eyes. We have this beautiful picture in our house, compliments of two very dear friends. They took the basic photograph, this one, autobiography of a yogi picture, and smoothed it out, did the photoshopping on it even better, and then printed it on metal. We actually have one, may have one for sale in our boutique, and if we don't, ask for them. So we have this sitting in such a position in our house that we can see it easily. And I do, every other week, I do these online classes, video classes. And for some reason, known only to itself, my computer this last Friday decided that it did not want to recognize the video camera that we have been using all this time. For a whole year, we just plug it together, and all of a sudden, there I am, like that. This time, there I wasn't. So we spent like 20 minutes trying to see if the computer would decide that it wanted to see me, and it never decided. So we just decided to do the same webinar as an audio, and even though we started late, we ran the whole hour. So normally when I do this, I have to look into the little circle of the camera, which it's actually become very interesting, the extension of intuition, which is what we're talking about here, because now I can see all your faces, and you know, I can see you. And there's I know who, where I am and what we're talking about. When you're doing a live webinar, there's consciousness there, but there's no faces. In fact, the faces look like this little black hole. And at first it was, to say the least, extremely weird, because I was just projecting my thoughts down that little black hole, you know, and there was just like me and the little black hole, and it was a very, but just by practice, I began to understand that they were all around me. So I sort of have this thought of how to reach people by looking at the black hole, but now I'm just in the room. And there's a few other people in the room, but I can't speak to them only because that's where the audience is. So this, the end of all this story is, I just gave this whole hour-long presentation directly to Master's Picture, which I normally can't do because here I'm looking at all of you, there I'm looking at the camera hole. And I just stared at that picture and we talked to each other. Now I remember Swamiji talking when he writes this in The Path about learning to lecture and deciding that the way he needed to learn to lecture to people, give classes, lecture is such an odd word, but he would give classes, is that he would feel like he was speaking to Master. And some of his friends, when he explained this great thing, said to them, how can you be giving a class to your own guru? You're giving his teachings to himself? And then Swamiji said, no, he said, to the presence of Master in the heart of everyone, waiting to be awakened. Now you have to understand, and this is where, well, I'll finish this thought. I was giving this whole talk to Master, and partly because the art of that particular photograph was so beautiful, but the whole face just became three-dimensional the longer I looked at it. And it just moves from being merely a symbol and a reminder of the consciousness behind it and becomes simply a window for that consciousness to come through. And the remarkable thing about this, you see, is this is sunlight coming through clear glass. This is not, oh, the person on the other side of the glass has to do something to make the sunshine. The only thing we have to do on the other side of the glass is just to open the curtain. It's always trying to get into us. It's just that we, who have these very tight edges and who don't know how to hold all of these realities at the same time, just decide to be small. When in fact, infinity is our very nature. This is, as I was saying earlier, this is the consciousness of the divine. He holds it all at the same time. He holds our little desires to go out to dinner with our friends and afterwards go to Rich's very rich ice cream and have one of those great, big, you know, delicious things that you can have here. Rick's Rich Ice Cream, I think is what it's called. One of our favorite places in this area. You know, just the smallest desire for something completely trivial. And at the same time, the deepest longing for God. It's all there, all at the same time. And this is the way God's consciousness works with us. And this is every level of the dream happening here at the same time. And so, on one hand, from a certain perspective, you know, we are just little children asking our Divine Mother to please put her arms around us in this extremely terrifying and unpleasant world. And on the other hand, at least philosophically, we can understand, what do I have to fear? I am the infinite itself. And I often think of it just like a spectrum, that here is the consciousness that I have now, and here's the edge of it, artificially induced, but nonetheless, here's the edge of it. And over there, some distance to my side, as I can face it, is my own infinite possibility. And the spiritual path is just simply expanding your edge until you merge into the infinite. And that's what we do in our spiritual work. That's why we're asked to serve. That's why we're asked to meditate. That's why we're asked to donate money, preferably to tithe. All the different ways in which we can define ourselves as bigger than the smallest. And the practice of yoga, as it's truly defined, as it is intended when Arjuna and Krishna are having the conversation, has a very interesting and profound meaning, which is indicated in there. Yoga is to cooperate with the reality we are presently experiencing and to use that reality to experience a greater and greater reality. And so here we are living in human bodies, and our thoughts of ourselves include human love, human relationships. Even our understanding of love is very difficult to grasp merely as an abstraction. We think of it in terms of how we express it and how we experience it, don't we? I love my mother, I love my wife, I love my children love me. You know, my grandmother, always I was my favorite child, my grandmother's favorite child. I love my puppy. You know, I love my kitten, I love my garden. We rarely just say, I love. We always have some way that we have defined and experienced that love has been magnetized out of us. But what we're experiencing is love, both receiving and the giving of it. And if we really contemplate objectively, we realize that that's what's happening, is that we have allowed ourselves, or we have awoken within ourselves, well, the sleeping presence of the divine, the divine love itself, and we experience love. Now, what we're trying to do as yogis is we're trying to move beyond just loving you and you and you, and receiving love from this one and this one and this one. And we're trying to just enter into the fact that behind every reality in this world, every vibration, everything we see and feel, every single person. This is where Swamiji says, he speaks to the sleeping presence of the divine represented by Master. Master is a person. As Swamiji puts it so beautifully, Master is a principle. Master is the principle of self-realization. He is the principle of the fact that the divine can be experienced. And he says it very perfectly, we betray the principle when we say that the example of the principle is the principle. Do you follow that? Jesus Christ is the only Savior. Jesus Christ represents the Christ consciousness. We betray the Christ consciousness if we declare that one example is the only reality. But we're trying to awaken the only possible expression of that principle is what I mean. We're trying to awaken that principle within all of us. But it's very hard to love a principle. Now, some people can. And that's what the Gita also refers to. But Swamiji writes elsewhere, even if your dedication is to the principle of truth or the principle of infinity, you also have to love it. Because if you don't love it, you won't move toward it. Isn't that so? Because that's what happens to us when we see any object that we love. I saw someone this morning whom I haven't seen in a while, and she looked wonderfully well. I said, "Oh, you look wonderful. Been working in the garden," was her response. Well, it agrees with you. Well, you love the flowers, you love the plants, you love the earth. And so what's been flowing through you is what we become. Now, if we want to expand our edges beyond just the good luck of having nice kids and a good husband and a sweet grandmother, part of the problem with all those things is little kids get big and grandmothers die and people's attitudes change and karma shifts. And so what we want to expand beyond is all these edges where our experience of that bliss through love is limited. We want it to be unlimited. Why settle for less? So we act as yogis. Well, love comes more naturally to me if I can love something. I sat there with that picture of Master in front of me, and it was a very rare opportunity. I can't even recall, actually, when I've ever been able for one full hour to just talk to him. We have a picture of Master and Swamiji in the back of this temple, which you all get to see as you walk out, but we put it primarily there for the person who stands here so that we will remember what we're doing here. But to have no other face but his and then just pour out all the thoughts and all the aspiration to be of benefit to the world. I mean, that's what someone in my position, that's what I do. I mean, I can just talk to myself in my own room if I'm just interested in my own ideas, which in fact I do. Just, I can't help myself. People ask me, you know, how do you prepare for services? I said, when am I not? You know, the mind is just welcome to my mind all the time. It's always just going through these realities. But the point of it is because, speaking for myself, having had the extraordinary good karma to have been instructed and inspired in the way I have been, I have to give it back every minute I can for the rest of my life, and the balance will never be on any side except for my own benefit. But nonetheless, just pouring it out because of what we love. And to make that what we love bigger and bigger. So why not, and I turn to the side here because I've stretched out the infinite, why not love the infinite over there? Why not love the guru over there? Why not love the expression of Divine Mother, whatever it is? Because what we love, we move toward. And we don't just move toward it physically. We don't just sort of hunker up to it and ask for a hug, which we do that sometimes. But what we're really asking is for that energy to merge, isn't it? You know, even when our loved ones are on the other side of the earth, I've been thinking just this evening, Swami Kriyananda is in, this evening, it's this morning here, Swami Kriyananda is in Gurgaon, India, and tomorrow morning he leaves for Pune, and the house that he's owned there in Gurgaon has now been sold because the value of it has increased 3 times, and they were able to sell it and then take that money, and they're going to help to develop the rest of the work. That house, for many of us, including me, has a very deep feeling to that house. It was Swami planted himself there. In fact, they named the house Guru Kripa, which means the grace of the Guru. So Swami is spending his last night in that house. It's 12 and a half hours later in India. The whole crew is there. So all this morning, I've been just thinking of that house, thinking of Swamiji in it, visualizing the various rooms. And, you know, it's now 11 o'clock at night there, 11:30 at night. Tomorrow morning, they'll get up and they'll walk out of that house. It's just a place. I had to say to myself, it's just a place. You know, the memories and the feelings I have about it exist regardless of the place. But because it's so vivid in my mind, all of you know this, if someone that you love and care about is somewhere else, you're always projecting your consciousness to them, aren't you? And it's very real to do so. You can live very closely in their reality. Sister Gyanamata, who was Master's most advanced woman disciple, spent very little time with him, in fact. But she was always with him in consciousness. And when he would be traveling around the country giving lectures, she always knew exactly where he was. And so at any moment she could know, oh, he's on his way, you know, now he's going, he's between, he's from in Boston and he's on his way to St. Louis. Oh, he's going to give his talk in another half an hour. Oh, he must be just finishing his talk. And in this way, from place to place, she would follow him with her consciousness. And he said about her, all I have to do, he said, is merely think one thought, and in the next day I'll receive a letter from her in response to that thought, because she was always extending her boundaries to him. That's available to all of us. Why are not all of us living that way? Because we're too busy here. We're too busy choosing that this is the level of the dream that we're going to relate to. But it is not in our best interest to do so. Because what is in our best interest is bliss. What is in our best interest is to live in this world as the masters live, and as the masters live is as God himself lives. It's an extraordinary promise. But as Swamiji received from Master this simple comment when he played the part of Jesus in a tableau, and afterwards for another organization, they invited Swamiji because he had a beard. And in 1950, very few men had beards, and the picture of Jesus was a beard, so they had him come. Afterwards, Master said to him, well, how did it go? Swami replied rather jocularly. He said, well, I'd rather be like Christ than just look like him. And Master said, oh, that will come. Just like that. Oh, that will come. I love that phrase. I like to think about it in my mind when I've done something particularly limited in its dimensions. I pretend, you know, I'd rather look like Jesus. That's a start, you know. But just that will come, that will come. You know, love makes all things possible, doesn't it? The more we love, the more bliss we have, the more bliss we have, the more we're on the wavelength of the divine, the more we're on the wavelength of the divine, the more God can touch us. And for this reason, we're reborn. God bless you.